This is HPR episode 1671 entitled Linux Lugcast episode 2 Outux. It is hosted by Kevin Wisher and is about 82 minutes long. The summary is some good content that we do not publish.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hello, HPR community. This is Kay Wisher from the Linux Lugcast Community Podcast. I'm here to bring you some more outtakes from our recorded podcast. This will be from episode 2. Listen for the intro, outro music in between sections. And a reminder to tune in to the HPR New Year's show. Please check the HPR website for details. Thank you for listening. Linux Lugcast, you don't feel obligated to record, but you can if you want, and since it's on your local machine, but you don't have to if you don't want to. You're not required to. Are you planning on joining in the conversation tonight? Do you not have a mic?
Oh, sorry about that. I was distracted for a second.
If any of our guests do not want to speak and just plan on hanging out and listening, go ahead and turn your mic off. That way we know that you're not going to speak.
Yeah, I'll probably just listen in for a little while. I got a couple things I unfortunately have to work on. I got a client with a website that got hacked, and so it's got me a little distracted.
That's fine. You're more than welcome to join in if you've got some comments or whatever, additions, corrections to anything we have to say, because we're not the gospel here.
Me either. Appreciate it, though. Thank you.
So how did you first find out about us? Do you want to be addressed by your nickname, or do you want to be addressed by your proper name?
Feel free to just call me Tom. I seen a post on Facebook, and I can't remember which one of my friends posted it right now.
Well, it wouldn't have been for me, because I don't do Facebook. Honky, do you do Facebook?
Oh, no.
I know Chatter does. He's so chatty.
Right, you are.
Yeah, I have so many friends, it's like I remember bookmarking it when I seen it posted. I clicked a link, bookmarked it, but then I never really did anything with it. It was last month's podcast or Lugcast that you did, and I said, oh, this looks cool, and I bookmarked it, and then I just followed up later with the IRC channel.
Well, whatever friend that is, we like him. Or her.
Yeah, give him a thumbs up or a like or whatever you do on Facebook.
Yeah, I'll start out for a little bit, but I might drop out partway through.
That's fine. Just if you're not going to be involved, just hit your mic icon up there at the top of the toolbar, and that way we know not to try to chat with you.
Will do. I'll do that when I know I got to drop out. Thank you, though.
Do we want to introduce everybody in the room when we first start off?
Well, that's why it's kind of the way Dor does his meetup thing is he kind of asks everybody that doesn't want to be addressed or spoke, you know, going to be actually participating to turn their mic off. That way he kind of knows who to introduce at the start of the show.
I think that's a good way to go. And then just kind of go down the line and then just kind of say the person's name, and they can just kind of either say hi or introduce themselves, whatever. That way that later on, if somebody, you know, chimes in or says something, at least they'll know who's talking.
We also offer a live stream if you just want to listen only and don't want to be here. I mean, if you want to remain anonymous, you can listen to the live stream and, you know, chat with us on IRC at the same time. We'll answer questions that way also.
Kevin, would you put the URL in the Mumble chat or the IRC for the live stream? I'm assuming that it's a stable URL. It's not going to change from episode to episode. Is that right?
Correct.
Never mind. I see it's already in the topic for the IRC channel.
So, Tom, how long have you been in the PC tech, PC repair IT field?
He just disconnected.
Oh, sorry. I like talking to myself anyway.
I think we scared him away with all that stream talk.
Kevin, you mentioned that you've installed five Manjaro installs recently for clients.
Yes, and you know what? I hear I have to do less follow-up support with them than I do with Windows clients, and I'm loving it. I mean, not that I don't want the extra money for this, you know, the extra support, but I just really, really get blown away by even, I mean, I'm getting a lot of senior citizen customers, and I'm putting them on Linux, and they just use it. I mean, they don't call, you know, I give them a brief overview of how to do, you know, get on the browser, check their email, and I don't have very many, I mean, they don't have very many demanding needs for an operating system. I mean, they're not doing, I got a few that do, you know, some photo editing for Facebook, you know, stuff like that, but we get very little calls about problems with Linux. And the reason I chose Manjaro is because I'm using it now pretty much for the last 5 months, and it's a very good rolling distro. I mean, I have not had any breakages with, I think they, about every 2 weeks they have release major updates and have not had a failed system yet.
Yeah, I was going to ask why you chose Manjaro and whether the choice was because that was what you were familiar with or what you ran. Sounds like that's what went into the decision.
Well, previously I was a big Mint user. Then I got tired of every 2 years having to retrieve a customer's computer and reinstalling and going through all that mumbo jumbo. And then I started using Linux Mint Debian. So, you know, that was a, you know, semi-rolling. So, you know, required less time on my part to do updates. And I can do about everything remotely on a rolling, you know, release as far as system updates. Or I show the user how to do it, and I tell them, you know, if you don't feel comfortable doing it, I can do it for you, or you don't have to do them at all. I mean, it's not that, you know, it's real serious not to do them, because a lot of times I find customers that haven't done them for quite a long time, but haven't experienced that yet on Manjaro. I'm trying to keep a email group of all my Manjaro customers, and if I see an update come down, I send out a reminder to go ahead and do the update, so they kind of keep more up to date, because I'm not that familiar with the Arch and Manjaro system yet. But.
Yeah, I was wondering how you handled that, how you handled updates and upgrades, whether you just left it in their hands, or when the upgrades, when you get notifications of the upgrades, do your customers contact you and say, listen, you take care of this for me, please?
I haven't had that request yet. I've showed everybody how, you know, they get, it's got an update notification down in the taskbar. I show them, I tell them how to do it, but I haven't received any calls yet for me to do it. Now, there's one customer I know that would probably never call me, and he would probably never do them, so I just do them for him remotely whenever, during the middle of the night or early in the morning when I know. He told me he's not a night owl and he never gets up before 9 a.m., so I just, when I go to work at 6:30 in the morning, I'll remote into his system real quick early in the morning and do it for him.
And so far you found the Manjaro upgrades are clean or stable, don't know the exact words, enough that you don't actually have to physically visit the site?
Correct. From what I've gathered from following Manjaro on the forums and their IRC channel, they default to a what's called a stable branch. They have a testing branch. It's kind of like Debian. They have the testing branch and the stable branch, and it defaults to the stable. And they do some testing in the testing repos before it gets released to the stable branch. So I feel, and like I said, that's where I've stayed all along, just on the stable repos, and I've not experienced any system breakages.
Now, I did hear some disparaging comments about Manjaro. I think it's because I think it was on the last segment of the HPR after show from New Year's, and essentially the statement came out was, yeah, we're to believe a three-man team. Now, I don't know how many people they've got at Manjaro actually can do testing and pronounce everything stable before they let it out, you know, running a week or whatever it is behind Arch.
Yeah, I think I remember that conversation from the New Year's show, and I, not having ever run Arch or Manjaro or anything Arch-based, I don't have any personal experience, but that seemed to be a pretty valid point. I mean, the only real experience I have with stuff in a testing edition is Debian, and testing for Debian, of course, is testing for the next stable release, and so you're going to always have bugs, and people point them out, and there are ways in Debian to find out if there are bugs against particular versions that you're possibly going to upgrade to, and I don't know. Kevin, in Manjaro, if say that package is going to get upgraded from one version to another, a higher numerical version, is there some kind of bug tracker that Manjaro runs where you can see if there are bugs filed against that?
I do not know that, whether it's an official bug tracker. I watch the forums every day to see reports of stuff, so, and I know there's a lot of users that follow the testing branch, so maybe I don't know. I don't even know the number of developers. If 50, you said you heard three. That kind of surprises me.
Yeah, maybe it's three that have the authority to actually commit more recent newer packages.
Well, the way they said it, I don't know if that's something they just pulled from outer space.
Well, I think, wasn't it Cobra 2 that was making that comment? If it was Cobra 2, I would tend to give his comments, you know, a decent amount of weight rather than just somebody out of the blue that I don't have any, you know, background on.
Yeah, I think you're right. I know I plan to try Manjaro on my little portable laptop. I'd had Synarch, which became Anergos, on it, and I was really happy with that. And it wasn't anything to do with the distro. It's just that I had no OCZ state drive in the thing, ended up, and I haven't got it done yet. I bought an Intel solid state drive. I've heard if you're going to buy a solid state drive, that's the way to go. But I've had, in the last year, I've had two SSDs from OCZ up and quit on me. Of course, I'm always buying behind, you know, I bought stuff off Newegg that was the cheapest way to do an SSD, and it was usually, you know, a couple technologies behind the current. So you pays your money and you takes your chance, I guess. But this time around, I think I'm going to going to try Manjaro on it.
But Kevin, on those Manjaro installs, they're all XFCE also?
Correct.
No, there's a spin of Manjaro for just about anything. I think XFCE comes out first.
Well, we were talking before you got here about I've installed Manjaro on 5 of my client customers. That's what he meant, I think.
Yeah, that was the context.
Yeah, they do have different desktop environment spins, like XFCE being the main one, but they've got an open box, a KDE, I think they even got a GNOME 3 and a Cinnamon that are like community spins. So they got about anything you want.
Yeah, I think, and Enlightenment. In fact, that was the thing. After Synarch became Anergos, I could never get Cinnamon to work again. So I moved over to E17. But this when they came out with the different spins about 2 weeks after the last Manjaro release, I grabbed the Cinnamon Manjaro. And, of course, it really doesn't matter, the desktop, because you can always install what you want and then install whatever desktop you want from the repos.
50, do you have your mic extra close to your nose or mouth? I'm hearing breathing.
I can move it away some.
I never heard your breathing before.
Is that better?
I think so.
Yeah, I don't have like a cough shield on it, but I can put one on.
50, just for what it's worth, I have a Kingston SSD in this machine. When I decided to spend the money on an SSD, I poked around Newegg and kind of got scared off by a bunch of OCZ bad ratings by people that purchased OCZ SSDs. And I think I might have mentioned it before. Somebody mentioned it. I think OCZ actually went bankrupt recently within the past couple months because of the poor quality of their hard drives.
Yeah, that did take them down. A lot of people, when I looked into it, it seemed to me like OCZ was as good as anybody else. And then the questions about quality came after I bought all of mine, because I bought a couple. Well, I bought one for the computer in the dining room, and another one for this little laptop, because it's only 1 megahertz dual core. And I want something to speed it up. Plus, have any mobile machine, it's better to have a SSD in it. So if it falls or anything like that, you're less likely to lose your data. But I had not seen the bad reviews. I mean, everything I'd heard when I bought all mine was OCZ as good as anybody else. And I think right after that, these things started coming.
Yeah, and again, for what it's worth, looking at some hardware reports that I've got on this system here, looks like I've had this Kingston about a year and a half now. October 2012 is when I created the file system on it.
Well, are we ready to get started?
Oh, I thought we were. You mean I'm on time?
We were waiting on you and just kind of doing a little pre-show chatter.
Yeah, I am sorry about that. It's kind of a near thing I'm here at all. I was looking up the TV schedule for tonight, and starting an hour and a half ago, my local PBS station was actually running The Three Doctors. I guess at least I got to see the first half of it. I've never seen that episode.
I'm fine with starting now, sure.
Who wants to kind of be the main MC tonight?
Well, I kind of did it last week. I'd like to give somebody else a chance.
I'll do it since I didn't bring any content tonight. How's that?
Works for me.
You're on.
Okay, we're going to do a little 5 seconds of silence here. I'm going to write down the show start time at 22:45. why isn't Madbot working? 50? Madbot.
Oh, no, that ought to be working.
At one point, I had seen some kind of list of commands that you could issue to Madbot, and now I can't find it. That's why I was trying the help command to see if that would output anything helpful, but I don't see anything.
Well, it could be. I clicked into Linux Basics, and I thought I was in Linux Lugcast earlier. And the bots are down because there was a big net split in Linux Basics. And so I ran the launcher again. So it could be that it's running twice on the server. I may need to kill it and start it again.
Out of curiosity, do you have a VPS that you can run Madbot on, or are you limited to just what's at your home?
Yeah, it's just my home server, and okay. It's just command line. It doesn't have a GUI on.
Are you running Lugbot also on your home server?
Yeah, they're both mine. I put up Madbot under approval, so. I'll kill one and use Madbot for everything. But I mean, I'll change the name.
Because it seems like your the time on your home server is off. It's ahead maybe 8 minutes.
It looks well. Everything syncs up with my time.
Take a look in the IRC channel. The last thing from Lugbot at 22:49, my local time, says K. Wisher, 0357 Zulu, which is fast.
Okay, I see what you mean there.
Do you run an NTP date cron job?
Well, it should be pulling its time off the internet.
Just SSH into it and type date with a date, the command to show the current date and time.
Yeah, let me do that just a minute.
Or time.
Yeah, you're right. It's about minutes fast. I'll look in that tomorrow and see if I reset where the time comes from. I guess I just assumed it was getting internet time.
Yeah, I run a cron job every hour to sync the time on this machine with a NTP server.
Can't you just tell it like any other device to just always use MET all the time?
Maybe you can. That's not how I understand how NTP works. I think you have to, as I understand it, you have to grab the correct time off the NTP server, and then your system, after you grab it, then your system uses that time, but may run fast or slow depending on your system. So you need to, as I understand it, you need to periodically, regularly refresh the machine time with the NTP server time.
Okay, I'll look into that tomorrow. I'm sure it's easy enough to do.
Yeah, on Debian, the only gotcha is that you have a naming convention for the files in /etc/cron.hourly. I can't remember what the naming convention is, but I just created a script in that directory named time, that with no extension. I think if you give it an extension, cron will not run the job on Debian, but I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, it probably applies to me. Mine's actually Ubuntu server, and the only reason I did that, I wanted to go with... getting foggy here. That the not free, because they're both free. The non-pay version of Red Hat, but it did not support my natively the RAID array in the machine. And I'd recently been bitten when I set it up by having Debian not. Having to compile everything for Debian, so I went with Ubuntu instead, which is probably my worst choice, but that's why it's a Ubuntu server.
Alrighty, folks. I'm going to call it a night.
Have a good one, Hucky.
Have a good one. Thank you.
Centos, that was what I was trying to think of. You out there, Thad? You are, you know, allowed to talk during the podcast if you want.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm kind of, my attention is in and out. I have a big licensing test to take in the morning, so I've been kind of studying and listening, so I didn't participate too much.
Well, that's fine, yeah. If you got a test, you need to concentrate on that.
I'm doing my best to try not to concentrate on it, but you know how that works.
Well, sometimes you can concentrate too hard, and you know, then just nothing works.
I kind of feel like that's probably where I'm at. I've been looking at this stuff for weeks, and really, I already know it. It's just, I'm freaking myself out a little bit about it. I know one thing, after I take this test tomorrow, I'm probably going to play with Rockbox.
We have a convert.
Well, I usually listen to everything on my phone, which is great, except for it's kind of bulky when I'm working out or I'm working out in the field or anything like that. It'd be nice to just have a little small one. And my daughter has a clip, so I know kind of how they work. But the big sticking point for me was the variable speed on the podcast, because I listen to podcasts at like 2 to 3 times speed because I'm crazy.
I have never gotten to a point where I can listen to a podcast speeded up that fast. For a long time, I was using Tempo 1.4 with Socks. Then I went to Tempo 1.45. And now I'm Tempo 1.48. I think when I went to 1.5 Tempo, I just couldn't follow along.
Depends on the topic matter and stuff. Sometimes I can kick it up near 200, but I'm usually a lot more comfortable at about 150.
I just looked pretty much everything. I listened at 2.75. There are a few that I can't. I don't know what it is. Ken Fallon, I cannot listen to him past 2. I don't know why, his accent in particular. It's not like it's not clear. Just something about it just slurs together and I can't understand a word he says.
Yeah, there's that one this afternoon, HPR. An excellent show, man. From Fosdam, the guy who was involved in Samba. But that, you know, I had it about 150 for the one before. I think that was a hookah. And I was driving a time, grabbed the thing, and, you know, feeled my way through it and slowed it back down to about 100. Actually, I slowed down to about 80, and I said, nope, everybody sounds like they're drunk. I went too far.
Yeah, I think I
was just going to say that was an excellent episode with Jeremy Allison.
Yeah, it was, actually. My big thing is usually not who's doing it. It's usually the recording quality. It's the stuff in the background that kills me if you speed it up, because it just turns into this massive sound.
Well, I said, oh, it was, you know, kind of a point of contention on the stuff a year ago that led to the first in, first out on HPR, you know, because they called for shows, and it's like, man, you've had 3 of mine for 6 months, but, you know, and some of the stuff that had been in there had been from Fosdam, but recording speakers, not recording interviews, and, but all those shows, it would, you know, I was listening for Clip or Fuse, maybe if I'd listened to headset sitting at a computer, but, you know, there were just a bunch of those shows, and it's, you know, to me, they were just nearly unlistenable because people were, you know, constantly opening pop cans and sliding their chairs, you know, it picked up all kinds of background noise. It's like, I listened to it, I was getting 1 word out of 3 on those.
Yeah, it's very rare I have to not listen to something because of how bad it is, but yeah, I think that was probably one of the ones I skipped, was some of the Fosdam stuff, even though some of it was really good. There just got to a point where some of it was terrible as far as the quality.
Well, I'm going to go grab a beer, and this is probably not good voice, Thad, but you know the old wise tale about you drink beers while you're studying, and then you drink a beer right before the test, and it all comes back.
Is that the trick? I don't drink, so I wish I did, and maybe that would help. And it's Taj. The H is silent. Everybody screws it up, though, so don't feel bad.
Yeah, I think I said that way first. Taj, okay.
I answer to all of them.
So, Taj, how did you find Linux?
It's a really long story.
Give us the condensed version.
I originally went to school to be a musician, got into audio and video production, lived the Apple world for a long time, and Apple was terrible, and I didn't want to go to Windows because that's what I kind of grew up with for the most part, and so I just played around until I found Linux, and it just kind of clicked, like the whole philosophy behind it. I was just like, oh yeah, this is what I've been missing. It also helped that like all the command line stuff that I knew for Mac, because it was BSD based, kind of just came over.
Yeah, I've just recently started using a Mac. It's because of my job. It's not because of personal preference, but I find a lot of similarities between Mac and Linux.
It is. It's just the whole everything is locked down. Like, that's the thing that irritated me to no end, was just you have to do it their way. There's no other way to do it. If you don't like doing it the Apple way, you wind up with this kludgy hack to make things work, and then they'll come around and break it, and it's a problem.
Sorry for stepping on your toes there, Taj. I was just going to bring up something that's been going through my mind lately, and that is with Wayland on the approaching horizon, I'm going to reach a point myself where my window manager is not going to be an alternative, an option. I use FVWM, and I don't think there's going to be any effort at all to make the thing run on Wayland, maybe under some X11 layer on top of Wayland, but it's going to get to a point where I'm going to have to switch to something else. And I started looking at Fluxbox, and I started looking at Enlightenment within the past couple of weeks, just to see if, first of all, whether they have plans to get their window managers running on Wayland. I don't know what Fluxbox is. Enlightenment, there's some kind of, well, we might, maybe, if we have the time, who knows? You'll have to just wait and see. But because I've used FVWM for such a long time, I have extremely specific preferences, and I would really, really, really rather not switch to a window manager that does not allow me to configure the preferences to something I'm used to and gotten used to and really prefer. So that's something maybe at some point people can throw out ideas on that subject.
Chatter, since I've never used FVWM, is there anything else that's real similar that I would be more familiar with?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head. There are a gazillion options that you can set in FVWM, and you can use one single text file configuration to set up your environment, or you can split the configuration file into smaller ones and then load the smaller files. But just to give an example, when I tried out Fluxbox recently, I do not like a panel at the bottom or the top or any side of a workspace. I don't want that. And maybe there's a way in Fluxbox to get rid of that. If there is, I didn't poke around deeply enough, persistently enough to locate how to do that. And another example with Fluxbox, in the panel, by default on Debian here, you get a pager which shows your workspaces, and you can switch to certain workspaces various ways. But I don't want to I want a separate panel. I mean, excuse me. I want a separate pager with my workspaces. And I got a separate panel running. I got a separate pager running, but I couldn't move the darn thing. It was stuck in the bottom right hand corner. I couldn't put it where I wanted it to go on my display. If I can't do that, then, you know, that's a minus in my opinion.
Now with XFCE, you can remove the default panel, like the bottom or the top, depending on where the distribution puts it, and then you can create your own user defined panels with, you know, specific things right on them, and you can move those panels around anywhere on your screen.
I kind of like the way Enlightenment does it. It's a little hard to get used to. Though I think you probably do this on any desktop, but I just know it does this by default. If you move your mouse pointer to the right or left edge of the screen, we'll go to the next workspace. The trick for that is you got to go in and set it so no window can. You've always got like a 3-pixel. Buffer between the edge of your window and the edge of the screen. That makes it a lot easier so you're not constantly switching desktops by accident.
The default action on Manjaro's XFCE is if you get your mouse in over your wallpaper in a blank area, if you're not over an open window or whatever, if you use your mouse wheel, you can switch to workspaces. And that's user configurable in the desktop settings, of course.
Well, I think it's like that for a lot of desktops.
But I find myself just using Control Alt arrow keys to switch workspaces. I do use the applet that's on my bottom panel. Also, it has a panel for switching. So there's three different ways I can switch workspaces depending on where my hands are.
How many workspaces do you usually run?
I used to run 4, but I found that I never used more than 2, so I just, here lately, I've just been setting up 2 workspaces.
And this is in XFCE, right?
Correct, yes.
Can you tell XFCE that if you start application foo, you want it always to run on workspace bar?
I don't get that deep into the configurations, but I think you can. I think there is a setting in there.
Yeah, I know I could do it in E17, so I assume that's, of course, XFCE a little sparse, but I assume it's in there. It's just knowing where to do it.
See, I have I put a link to an image of my desktop in the Bumble chat, and so you can see how many simultaneously running applications that I've got, and the pager up there in the top left, not only does it display mini icons for the application, if the application has a mini icon, if you move your mouse cursor over that application in the pager, a little pop-up appears, and it'll say Mutt, or it'll say XChat, or it'll say, you know, Firefox or something else. And I don't know if XFCE has that or Enlightenment has that capability.
My first Google search for XFCE start application on Workspace tells me that the default settings, there's no way to do it in the default XFCE, but there is a add-on application called Devil's Pie that will allow you to do that.
Hey, Chatter, what's going on the background?
Oh, that's my Wi-Fi antenna, don't you know?
That's a pretty serious Wi-Fi antenna.
No, actually, what that is, there's a blog called Shorpy, Shorpy.com, and it has antique photo images, photographs, and the guy who runs the site will have, you know, maybe a couple weeks will go by where there's nothing interesting, and then there'll be something which is so god awfully unusual that I grab it and make it my background. Now that's another thing, Kevin. In XFCE, if you've got, let's say you've got 4 workspaces, can you have each workspace have its own wallpaper or background?
Yes, and I have dual monitors, and I can specify which background on which monitor and which workspace on each monitor, even.
And I imagine you can customize use right or left or middle mouse button click on the background, you can pop up an application menu like appears in the image of the workspace that I put up?
Yes, there is a pop-up menu to get to applications and your menu, yes.
Is that a text file, if you know?
The menu itself, I'm sure, is a text file, yes, that you can go in and edit. Where it's located, I don't know. Like I say, I don't get real deep into customizing.
And I imagine you can make things sticky so that, like, certain system monitors will appear on all workspaces, right?
I'm not sure. I run Conky, so I have a Conky going on, and it stays on all desktop, all workspaces. I used to use, before I switched to XFCE, well, even when I first switched to XFCE, there's some Screenlets, I think's the name of the application, where you can put little widgets all over wherever. It's got, you know, clocks, calendars, weather, time, you know, system resource monitors, stuff like that. And by the time I started adding 5 or 6 Screenlet widgets, it seemed like it was eating up too much resources. So I finally learned how to set up Conky, and I like it a lot better.
Yeah, that's one thing that's really endeared me to. Another thing that's really endeared me to FEWM is that with some of what is displayed in that image that I put into the Mumble chat, some of that are FEWM modules. And with FEWM running along with all the modules, it takes about 20 meg of RAM. In XFCE or Enlightenment, is it possible to create custom title bar buttons so that you can click on a button and send the application to another workspace, or shade and deshade, you know, roll up, roll down the window?
Speaking for XFCE, if you right click on the header bar of any open window, you can choose which workspace to send. It's got send to, you can roll up, which is, I think, you can roll up the open window into just a title bar. It's also got always on visible workspace, and then move to another workspace, and then depending on how many workspaces you have enabled, you can choose which one to send it to.
If you know, can you, FEWM has something called styles for different applications. So if I open up the terminal, I don't have a title bar. Is that something that you can customize in XFCE, if you know? Create, and I might have asked you this question before, I have a feeling I did. Can you create a style or something for, like, let's say, Xterm, where Xterm, when you open up Xterm, it doesn't have a title bar?
I'm not sure about that one. How are you, if you've not, I'm assuming you haven't loaded up XFCE yet.
No, I can't remember the last time I even ran XFCE. It was probably years ago.
You only have the one computer.
Yes, that's right.
Can you run a VirtualBox on that one computer to play around with different distributions that specialize in specific desktop environments?
Well, I wouldn't even have to do that. I could just drop down to a TTY and log in, and then start a second X session. That's what I was doing when I was poking around in Enlightenment and in Fluxbox. Just have X start on a different display.
But you have to install each window manager desktop environment, right?
Right. Yes.
I just don't like installing multiple desktop environments. I ran into issues when I had multiples trying. I don't know. I think I was back when I first started Linux. I was playing around with KDE and GNOME 2 at the same time, and things got wonky.
Yeah, with KDE, I think this was a while ago, a couple years maybe. I think I started some kind of KDE control center or settings manager, and it changed my mouse cursor to this, to me, extremely ugly Oxygen mouse cursor, and I had to log out of X and log back in for the original mouse cursor to be used. I couldn't figure out how to get rid of that KDE style mouse cursor. That was the only trouble really that I had, where something was stomping on the way I wanted to actually have things appear. Because I have dropped to a TTY, logged in, and started up KDE. And who knows? Maybe I'll have to go to KDE. But as near as I can tell, it seems like KDE, everything is basically done graphically instead of poking around in text files, configuration files. And I will have to learn a whole new set of jargon words, because I doubt whether what something is called in FEWM is going to be called the same thing in KDE. So if I, you know, have something start on a particular desktop, there's a FEWM term for that, and it's probably something completely different in KDE, just as an example.
So you know for a fact that FVWM is not going to work with Wayland.
Well, I haven't had it specifically told. Nobody specifically told me, but I would be astonished if it did. First of all, it's not a compositing window manager, and as I understand Wayland, if you're going to have a window manager running, that's not Weston. I think Weston is the window manager that comes with Wayland by default. It's got to be a compositing window manager. It's got to be able to do 3D stuff. And I know for a fact that FEWM will not go to become a compositing window manager. That I have specifically remember seeing said in the IRC channel and on the mailing list. But FEWM has served me well for more than a decade, and you know, it'll be sad to have to put the thing to sleep. But you know, it's just something that I'm going to have to face at some point in the future. Because I think after a period of time, when Wayland actually hits the mainstream distributions, it's the X11 development is really going to drop off the cliff, and you're going to get to a point where, hey, you can't do these things anymore. You've got to move.
Well, gentlemen, it's been fun, but I got to get to bed so I can get up for this test in the morning. Hopefully I'll be on here next time and actually be able to focus and contribute a little bit more.
Well, good luck on the test.
Yeah, definitely. Good luck, and thanks for dropping in.
Which test is it?
I am adding a endorsement to my teaching license for a higher level math certification than I have now to teach some advanced classes. We have a strange situation where we have a lot of special ed students that are in really advanced math, so they need somebody to get the license, so I agreed to do it.
Well, that's kind of interesting here. You got to come in sometime and explain how that works. That seems like a contradiction to me.
Well, technically, special ed is anything that is not normal. So I always try to relate it to the kids when they find out they're special ed and they get bummed about it. Is special ed goes all the way from somebody changes your pants to this kid is 12 years old and should probably have a master's degree. And so we have a few kids that are really scary smart right now.
Oh, okay, I bet kids like that. So that includes the gifted programs then.
Technically, we don't have a gifted program, which is kind of silly. But yeah, most I know in my state, which is Indiana, it all gets lumped under special ed. Or actually, now it's not special ed; it's exceptional child education is the new term.
Yeah. Indiana? Well, you ought to be hanging out with 330 and Pegwall then.
I'm in Indiana too.
No way. I want to hang out with 330 because we have a lot of similarities. I always love when he actually pops in, which is not very often anymore.
If you don't have to be specific, but whereabouts in Indiana?
I can be in Louisville, Kentucky in about 10 minutes. So I'm right on the border, right on the river.
Oh, I'm up in the Kokomo area.
Well, I know nothing from Indiana, but 330 and Pegwall in Richmond. I understand, you know, unless you come in there with crack pipe you cut.
Indiana has a lot of meth everywhere. It seems like everywhere you go in Indiana, that's what everybody wants to talk about is meth, or at least that's been my experience. All right, guys, later. Catch you.
Take care. Bye.
you know, see you, Taj.
Well, I see we have two live listeners on the stream.
Oh, fine. Nobody during the show.
Well, I may have forgot to refresh the web interface for the IceCast to check that, but at the start we didn't have any, but then I posted something in Altcast Planet, so I don't know if we picked up a couple from there.
Well, if you're listening to us and you're in the planet, fess up so we know who our listeners are.
And why aren't you in Pound Linux Lugcast? It may be Ryerky. He finally found us today on IRC.
Yeah, whatever happened to, oh, what's his name? I forget, who swore up and down
he was. He was here at the start, and then he said he may have to drop out because he had a client that had a website that was crashing or something. So he wasn't here. He talked to us a little bit before you joined, I think.
I guess that's a valid excuse.
Flipside Creations, I believe, is his IRC handle.
Yeah, that's who I was thinking.
So, do we want to, Honky's not here, so we couldn't, he left abruptly before we get a chance to discuss if we wanted to officially invite Jonathan on a show to discuss the state of his fundraiser and everything.
Well, not that I'm opposed to it. After you brought that up, you reminded me, and I listened to that meetup. I think they did a pretty good job of kicking that whole thing around. Now, amount of money Jonathan had, if I'd been involved in making the decision, which I'm not, I might have pointed out to him, okay, people obviously don't want your money, but they've said, half the problem with Orca is that other programs don't report, don't do notifications in a standardized way. And that's why Orca doesn't work with them. And, if I was Jonathan, I would have said, fine, what we'll do is if they'll give us a list of those bugs, then, we'll put a bounty on those other applications to do those bugs. Because I hadn't looked at the final total, but I don't think, I'm not sure you actually collect enough, pay anybody enough to actually fork the thing and do anything with it.
Is the fundraiser has been completely stopped? Is that what you're saying?
I think it's over now.
He didn't stop it because of this kerfuffle, did he?
Well, I didn't. Is it still going then? I didn't think it was.
I haven't looked at the fundraising page lately, maybe probably in a couple of weeks, but I had the impression that there was an expiration date, and the expiration date has passed. And as near as I know, he didn't stop the fundraising early. So the question of whether he stopped it because of, the differences he had with Joanne Marie, I don't even think came up. Like I said in the emails, or somebody said in the emails, it started off on the wrong foot. And, maybe if it had been done differently from the start, the, response of Joe Marie Diggs would have been different, but who knows? Sometimes you antagonize somebody without even knowing that that's what's going to happen. And I got the impression from Jonathan that that's what the situation was here. He had very little contact, if any contact, with Joe Marie Diggs before starting the fundraiser. And, so he didn't know, he had no heads up or idea what her response was going to be at all.
Well, I get the impression this is kind of a closed project. I mean, there's not, they're not even set up to take contributions from well-meaning people who would donate their time to work on bugs or enhance the program. So I can kind of understand her, her thinking, well, she's the sole person working on it, so anybody who's collecting money to pay other programmers is saying to her, well, you're not doing the job. Obviously they're not even set up to take code contributions from volunteers.
Well, actually, the Orca page itself has a way of how to submit a patch. So, I don't know if they're on GitHub or some other place. They do use Git, so there's got to be some Git repository somewhere that you can submit patches to. And I don't have any inside information or information as anything more than what Jonathan said on the Podnuts meetup. But one of the impressions that I got was that his focus was we're going to work on Orca. But looking at the Orca project pages, the focus is on applications that are trying to talk to Orca, or Orca is trying to talk to, you know, vice versa. And so Jonathan was trying to fix something that they don't think needs fixing, instead of going after what Orca thinks needs to be fixed. And maybe I'm not explaining that clearly, but that was one of the impressions that I got from looking at the Orca project pages and seeing the couple of things that Joan Marie Diggs had put up on Ken Fallon's site and she had put in the Reddit thread. You know, there's a on the Orca page, on the Orca website, there's a How Can I Help page, which gives instructions on how to submit patches. So they are looking for patches. The thing that I remember Jonathan saying in the Podnuts meetup is that somebody had asked in the mailing list, how do I get involved, or what can I do to help? Well, if the person hasn't taken the time to find out, is there a how can I help page on the project, how serious are they about making a contribution? Because this is an extensive page about what they want to do and how to do it. So the person doesn't even need to post anything to the mailing list, it seems to me. Does that make sense to people?
Yeah, I mean, I see the points on both sides, but what's really got me baffled is, and I applaud John for his cause and everything, going after, you know, trying to get this, make Orca, you know, the premier screen reader and everything. But why wouldn't he have contacted the developers first and said, hey, I'm a blind user, I use your product, this is the shortcomings I see, and I'd like to start this fundraiser to solve these problems. Where do you need help? Where's the help needed? Instead of trying to, I mean, I just don't understand the planning behind it. I mean, I applaud his effort, and I have nothing bad to say about what he's trying to do, but I can understand the developer's point of view also, is that she need the help needed to be in the applications accessing Orca, and I think he could have done a better job of pointing his efforts in that direction, you know, in being communicating with the developers from the get-go to find out where the help was needed.
Yeah, like yeah, I
and
said,
I'd step out for a couple of minutes. What you said, Chatter, that they actually have a place to accept patches and submissions, that completely changes the tone of it, because you know, that they ask for help, and then when somebody says, okay, we'll give you the help, you know, we'll pay somebody to help you out, and then they say, no, we'd rather not have that. The guy that Jonathan was in contact with, who offered to do code review and see if they could make things more efficient, and said, no, we don't want that either. It just sounds like Anne-Marie's been real protective of her job. And, you know, I can kind of understand that kind of flies in the face of the spirit of open source.
Well, refresh my memory, because I remember some discussion about code review. Was that on the Orca mailing list, or was that in the private mails that Jonathan had with somebody who had posted to the Orca mailing list?
I think that was both, because there was something about somebody who had heard about the project and said, well, I can't contribute any money, but I'll contribute time. And he contacted on the mailing list Anne-Marie and said, well, you know, I'm pretty good at checking stuff. I offer to do a code review. And he said, I've talked to Jonathan. And then she came back, slapped Jonathan in private notes, says, how dare you send this guy to say that I need a code review?
Yeah, I can speak from personal experience that if somebody ticks me off, it's very easy for me to stay ticked off at them. And if somebody is ticked off at me, it's very easy for them to stay ticked off at me. And sometimes, from personal experience, sometimes that will never change, or it might take years to change. And the reason for me being ticked off at them or them being ticked off at me could be something that is a complete misunderstanding. So, you know, maybe something can get repaired. Maybe it can't. Like you said, Kevin, I don't know why it just seems never to have occurred to Jonathan to notify, you know, to bring this up before he started it. It just seems never to have occurred to Jonathan. And I'm more than willing to give him the benefit of the doubt on that. It wasn't like he was trying to go behind their backs or start up something that he was in control of and that, they would have no input about. I don't believe that's how Jonathan works. I've never had any indication at all that that's how he works. I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt.
I agree totally. But I'm making a big assumption here from what information I've gathered from ever since he started the fundraiser and was, you know, always on every other podcast speaking of it. Just the impression I got without him actually confirming it is that it sounded to me like he'd already been in contact with the developers, and this is what they needed, and this is why he was doing this. Now, he never said that, but I just took that from the context of all his promotions for it, you know, and everything.
Yeah, I think part of the thing is that I'm in a bubble. I get my news from certain areas, and Joan Marie Diggs or other people at the Orca Project get their news from some other sources. They may have never even heard of Jonathan's fundraising efforts, or they may have heard that, oh, there's this sonar project thing, and they read two sentences about it, and that's the last thing that they ever find out about it. And then all of a sudden this thing appears out of nowhere. Maybe that's what happened. I know it, like you said, it was being promoted to the hilt, in many places that I follow, but that doesn't necessarily mean that she's going to get a heads up about it, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, that kind of surprised me. I thought the part of the podcast from Jonathan is why I started getting emails from the FSF, EFF.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought they would have been, you know, I thought he was going to say they were supportive emails and, you know, oh, yeah, let's talk to her, explain what you're doing. But it was like all the emails are, who the hell are you and why are you collecting money?
Well, to me, that indicates that he didn't even run it by the FSF, or if he did, he didn't sit down with them and say, look, this is what I'm planning. This is what my target is. If I reach my target, I'm going to do this. If I don't reach my target, I'm going to do the other thing. That, it was, if he talked to somebody about planning, like, I think he mentioned that he talked to Jason Calacanis at one point, who's like this super mega multi-billionaire practically, for startups and venture capital. He got like 15 minutes with the guy, with some advice. But I don't know who else he contacted for this kind of thing. It's really a shame because, you know, something that started out as with a outstanding goal is now caught up in all this extraneous bad feelings. It's really a shame.
Well, like I said, it's not like I've got any place telling Jonathan what he could do. But I mean, if it was me, the way I would have handled with Anne-Marie saying, you know, our major problem is that all these other applications and programming frameworks do not report data in the way they should, in the standard way that they should be. Instead of saying, okay, let's do a quasi fork of Orca, and I don't think he's got enough money to do that. But I would have said, okay, fine. Give me a list of these divergent applications, and I will pay a bounty for people to submit patches to make them work in a way that Orca can deal with.
Yeah, but that's not dealing with the Orca project. That's dealing with Thunderbird or, you know, some other code base. And I'm repeating myself, I know, but the impression I got was that Orca doesn't have any problem with their own code. It's the code in these other applications. LibreOffice or Thunderbird, and I think they give some other examples. But all that stuff is on, and I'm repeating myself, all that stuff is on the Orca Project website.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That at least would have kept peace in the family. I don't, you know, there's other thing. I mean, I think the way I understand it, it kind of would have broke. If everything started working the way it should be, it would break Orca, because Orca does some kludges to get around, you know, the way these things are, the way the other applications are doing things in a way they should not be doing. But I don't think there's a, you know, in that position, I don't think Anne-Marie could possibly. And, you know, I don't know if anybody, I guess what you're saying, Chatter, is people donated to the project would say, oh no, you're spending my money in a wrong way because you're fixing other applications other than Orca. I can't imagine anybody donated would make a complaint like that, you know, and as it stands, people are saying, well, the money's not going to Orca, at least not the Orca we know. And, you know, I don't think anybody's going to come up and shout fraud or something like that.
No. Well, getting back to the first question, Kevin, when, you know, you brought this up, I'm inclined to think, let's not have Jonathan on the show to talk about this. If we have Jonathan on the show, he should talk about Northeast Linux Fest or something else, but not bring up at all the fundraiser. I think he's grown up enough that he's not going to, you know, feel like we're picking at a scab or something, but you get to a point where if he, this is what I expected would happen. You get to a point where for him to give a complete explanation, he's going to have to get into private stuff. And stuff that's none of my business. So if he's on the show, just make it clear that we're not going to talk about the Orca and the Indiegogo stuff. You know, that's just my feeling. I'm curious, but you know, I can understand myself well enough to think, well, I'm curious because it's like, hey, I like to find out the inside scoop about stuff. And you know, a lot of times the inside scoop is, like I said, none of my business. So,
well, I mean, the main reason I asked the question, and it wasn't to, like you said, to put him on the spot, is do we want to make that part of our show? I mean, we never really discussed bringing on, you know, special guests. Is that something we want to do?
Well, Lugs hat, you know.
Yeah, that's a good
point. Let's be clear. We're not Linux Basics. I mean, I was thinking the other day, you know, we're not, you know, Linux Basics tried to keep everything for new Linux users, and it was real hard because everybody wanted to talk about the new and shiny. And, you know, it was hard to keep them on top to you know, something to help out the newbie user. But we're a lug, and a lug, like we said, a lug is talk about what worked, what didn't work, and, you know, lugs definitely have guests on occasionally, you know, have speakers in. So, yeah, I don't think it's at all having a problem with having Jonathan on. And when you first mentioned it, K-Wisher, I thought, well, I didn't know about this. I want to know more about it. But listening to the Podnuts meetup, other than, you know, me criticizing the way Jonathan handled it, like I said, I would have done it away. And pointing out there is, the Chatter brought up that the Orca website does have a path to submit patches. And then obviously they don't want anybody to do that. You know, that's the only other point I think we could bring out that wasn't covered in the meetup. So I don't know what we could possibly add. Now, I mean, as far as talking to Jonathan, say, no, we're not going to talk about that subject. I don't know if that's necessary. If Jonathan, we'd just like to have you on and talk about Northeast Linux Fest, and if he brings this thing up, well, fine.
Yeah, I think having guests like you said, 50, that's fine, because the lug meetings I've been to, and it's been, you know, 10 or 12 years since I was physically at a lug meeting, we always had somebody come in and make a presentation, and it could have been a lug member, or it could have been a representative of a commercial company, or it could have been, you know, somebody who's not connected at all with the lug. I tell you who I would like to interview, and 50, you might run this by the KPO people. There's the Rochester Institute of Technology announced this week that they are starting up an academic minor program, not a major, but a minor in free and open source projects. And basically it's coding and programming is a small part of that, but it's actually the operation of the projects seems to be what a lot of the emphasis or focus is in that minor. And I would like to see, I would like to hear somebody interviewed from the RIT departments that are involved with that as to how they develop this, what kind of materials are going to be used in the different classes. Is there going to be like a clinical program where the students in the minor go out and actually get involved with a project and have to, present information, make a presentation to the other students in the minor about what their experience was? Is this going to be a MOOC where anybody can sign up for the classes and take them over the web? And all these kinds of things have been going through my mind the last couple of days when I saw the notice on Reddit about the, I think it was on Reddit where I saw the notice about the thing. So KPO, when KPO had that fellow from Penn Manor, that was the, to me, that was far and away the best KPO I ever listened to. And if you could do something with the Rochester Institute of Technology faculty, that would be excellent in my opinion.
Yeah, I'll see what I do. That sounds very interesting. Yeah, the Penn Manor deal was, you know, completely afield for, I mean, it's not like we haven't had guests on before, but you're right. But I saw those things and I said that, you know, you probably know it was me that made the contact, said, I am going to get that guy on before Tilts does.
Good for you.
And tomorrow night, if he's on, I you know, we haven't really done nearly as much formal planning, but Handsome Pirate has been a Red Hat employee for about 6 months now, and I hit him up 2 weeks ago at the end of the show. If he remembers, I want to have him on and have him talk about what it's like to be a Red Hat employee.
Well, you know, there's things about Red Hat and there's things about Red Hat, and I'm looking to see if I got something that I can drop into the Mumble chat about that. You know, they sell an awful lot of services to Homeland Security, the CIA, the NSA, the military, and you see it mentioned every so often, but not an awful lot. But yeah, I bring that up between the three of us. I would never try and ambush Handsome Pirate with questions along those lines. But I think it's interesting how, you know, there's another side to Red Hat that really doesn't get covered.
Well, he's on the ARM development side, so I don't really think he would probably be involved in any of that. Though it's ARM becoming a more and more popular embedded device, you don't know. Surely those agencies will be very interested at some point. I mean, I think with everything going to tablets and smartphones, where I think in 10 years, it may be the closest thing that we have to a desktop computer is one of these little ARM boxes with an external USB drive plugged in your TV. I don't know if the desktop computers we know it has a future, or at least if it does, it will be incredibly expensive because, you know, where everybody's got one now, maybe 1 out of 10 or 1 out of 20 people hold one.
Yeah, that may be true. I don't own a television set now, and last time I owned a TV was 2007, and that was just for a couple of months. So I'm really not up on what's happening with television.
Well, I think in the future there will be a whole lot of convergence between computer monitors and TVs. I bet it'll come to the point that there really won't be much difference in price. For that matter, I think for a lot of people's, I mean, TV now, any TV you buy now is just a computer. You don't have access to any normal kind of interface, but a TV right now is just a computer and a monitor, and I think give it a few years there'll be more and more they will bring out those computer functions. So instead of people buying two devices, their TV will be their Echo.
I'm sorry. I was trying to see if I had. I had some web page opened at one point, which was a listing, I think, from redhat.com, but I'm not sure, that listed all the upcoming conferences or trade shows that they were going to either participate in or have a booth, have representatives at. And there was an awful lot of, there's an awful lot of ordinary commercial data, big data kind of places, but there was a number of things that might have a different aspect to them, spying in essence. Yeah, I just opened up the Indiegogo thing for Jonathan. He raised $6,811 of the $15,000. And I don't know. At one point, I tried to see if some of these places, I don't remember if it was Kickstarter or Indiegogo, to see if there was some kind of way you could follow up to see what the money is going to. And one of the places, again, I don't remember if it was Kickstarter or Indiegogo, there was like a comments section, and you could ask questions, but whether the people at the fundraising place, whether the people that were trying to raise the funds would reply was, you know, you kind of hit or miss. So I don't know if there's a way for Jonathan to publicize on this Indiegogo page what money he has actually received and what he has spent the money on.
Well, I mean, that's my point. I think, Jonathan's always been awful ambitious to reaching, his goals. Anne Bree, they got to be paying her, what, 50 grand a year at least to work on this. I can't imagine anybody doing less. And, I can't imagine 6 grand is going to make a significant dent in building a divergent version of Orca. Like I said, I think I have to keep harping on this, but I think you it would be a lot better spent with that list of other, the other software that does not play well with Orca and pay a bounty on getting people submit patches. Of course, just because you have somebody work out a patch doesn't mean it's going to be accepted, because its accessibility is not a high priority, obviously, for these other packages, or they would work with Orca.
Anyway, I think he's going to be pretty busy between now and beginning of April when NELF actually happens. So, maybe sometime after NELF is over, we can ask him to come on. That's just a thought. Maybe he's got free time that he would want to dedicate to coming on the podcast, but you certainly give him the option to wait until after NELF.
I think you're right. That would be time to see how all this has worked out. Because he wanted better voices for Orca. $6,000, I don't think you get very far on that. Now there is this other other project talked about on HBR, the South America, is like 1-3 something. And again, it sounds like these guys ought to throw their lot in with Jonathan or the other way around. But everybody's like, no, this is my project, and I'm not interested in cooperating with somebody else even the same goal. Especially since this other project that, was interested in trying to monetize. They had the free version, they had the premium version that they were trying to monetize. Did you hear that one, Chatter? It was one of the interviews that Ken did.
You mean what you said about the South American and Voices? I don't remember noticing that in any of the FOSDEM interviews, no.
I don't think this was FOSDEM. I think that this was something else. Let me see if I can bring up the HPR without completely crashing mumble.
I need to call it a night.
All right. Thanks. Thanks for hosting. Thanks for being the host, Kevin.
Did we ever come up with some intro outro music?
I have neglected that. I have not looked.
So we should probably just figure on putting out this episode without.
Well, we could leave it up to the host, Kevin. So whoever hosts the next time gets to choose the intro and outro music, which I think is a good way for me to never be the host, right?
Yeah, you could be our Dan. You can just claim that your lousy taste in music precludes you from hosting.
Well, I'm going to head out. I'll chat with you guys later.
Night.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.